You're listening to SA Talk, San Antonio's favorite podcast for discussions involving the Alamo City. I'm your host and favorite retirement advisor, Zachary Espericueta. Today's Friday, July 30th, and I have a great guest joining me this week on the podcast by the name of Irma Iris Duran. Just recently, she took on a new role with the City of San Marcos as their Community Initiatives Administrator, but is still a resident of San Antonio and has been for many years. She's also very involved with local school districts, including a recent campaign for NISD Board of Trustees. She's been a huge advocate for more communication between schools and households and believes that we need to make sure we're encouraging each other to be active in our own communities. Before taking on her new role in San Marcos, Irma spent about 14 years working for the City of San Antonio. She attended both Taft and Clark High School in Northside Independent School District and holds her bachelor's and master's degrees from UTSA and Texas A&M San Antonio, respectively. She's also spent time sharpening her leadership skills with the Latina Leadership Institute and the Women's Leadership Mentoring Program. When she's not working or taking care of her kids, she also spends a lot of time volunteering and participating with numerous organizations like Girl Scouts, the Fiesta San Antonio Commission, PTA, and even United Way. Like I said, Irma is very involved in the local community, and you'll get to hear more of that throughout the conversation. Before we get to the conversation, I wanted to give a huge shout out to some brand new supporters of the podcast. I'm happy to announce that Jason Lucerio, Anthony Hernandez, and Anthony Viejo are all now monthly supporters of the show. Thank you all so much for supporting my content and my podcast. It really means a lot to me. Listeners, if you also want to support the podcast and hear your name on the show, just like you heard theirs, be sure to visit the link in bio and click support monthly. I would greatly appreciate it if you did. I'm really excited to get to my conversation with Irma Duran, so here it is. It's a pleasure to have you here on the podcast, and I'm really excited to talk about just education here in San Antonio and some of the challenges that San Antonio faces and just in general that education faces in our community. So happy to have you on.
Thank you so much.
So I guess tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. You're from San Antonio?
I moved here when I was 4 years old. I'm originally from San Benito Tejas. Not many people know where that is, but it's the last bathroom stop before South Padre Island. That's the the only way people would know where it's at because it's that small. When I was a child, my dad had a job offer here in San Antonio. And it was around the same time that my brother was born with several health issues. So it was basically his boss doing him a favor and saying, hey, you know, we know that you need to be in San Antonio because that's where the hospitals are and family comes first. So that was my first experience of someone going out of their way to help us to live a better life. And once we moved to San Antonio, we met extended family. And I mean, we're both Hispanic, so, you know, we have cousins. It's not first cousin, second cousin. I think half of them are probably six or seven cousins. But everyone took us in San Antonio as soon as we arrived and made sure that that we were well provided for, that we knew where the best schools were at. And that's why we moved to the Northside area when I was 4 years old. My parents were trying to find the best schools in San Antonio, and they heard about this district and they said, all right, let's go. And throughout my first 18 years, I want to say we lived in seven different neighborhoods as my parents.
Wow.
Yeah, I went to two different elementary schools, one different middle school, two different high schools, just moving around to find the best education for their kids. And and that's where I really noticed the huge disparity. We're in one district, and even at a young age, I saw the disparity from one side of Northside to the other.
And I actually attended Communications Arts, which some know is a magnet school to Taft. And it looks like, I mean, you went to Taft.
I went to Taft for 2 years. Yeah.
Graduated at Clark, I'm assuming.
Yes. Right, I graduated then from Clark. I moved. I didn't finish my sophomore year at Taft, but I started my junior year at Clark.
You know, you bring up a good point, because that is something that even in Northside, you know, I mean, we could sit here and talk about the different school districts, and we might later on in the conversation. But I mean, even in Northside, you see that disparity going from one high school to another just because of the neighborhoods that they're in. And so, I mean, that definitely is something that I noticed. I mean, of course, I only went to one high school. I went to Communications Arts there at Taft. But I'm sure you noticed the difference going from Taft to Clark.
So I did notice a huge difference. Unfortunately, you know, right now we're focusing on Northside, but that happens all over San Antonio. We have 17 independent school districts, and San Antonio is historically one of the most segregated cities economically and racially in the nation. And the 17 independent school districts as a result of that. So you do have some people moving to certain parts of town just because of that's where the good schools are. And meanwhile, the neighborhoods are starting to flounder in other parts of the city just because the schools aren't as good. And when that happens, they don't get the funding from the state because they don't have the attendance, they don't have the test scores, and they don't have the numbers. And it's not because of the fall of the school. It's because people are bouncing around to find the best education for their child, which I understand. I do the same thing as well.
Well, and some of the school districts, they are landlocked. Like I know Edgewood is landlocked, so they can't expand even if they wanted to.
Right.
If they try to expand. Like Northside has the privilege of doing, or Northeast, and some school, you know, even on the South side, they can do that, but some school districts can't.
Right.
You know? And like you said, that leads down the road to maybe decreased funding or not as much of an increase as other schools may receive.
Correct.
You know, you bring up this flaw that we have here in San Antonio with the 17 different school districts, and how, you know, the way they're split up really does date back to segregation. And you see that in the redlining. But kind of talk a little bit about some of the flaws that we see in the education system as of now, or at least that you've seen recently.
So as of now, it does trickle down all the way from the state. And I think if you've been following the news, you know that things are pretty hairy right now at the state level. Unfortunately, this has been one of the years where the government and the state legislation has been imposing more control over education while cutting funds even more. So even compared to 10 years ago, you would have funding from the state topped with property tax. And you're seeing the funding cut year after year after year. And if you've seen your property taxes, the percentages have not gone up for the school district, but you have felt that impact in your property taxes. So unfortunately, it goes to the top where the government is saying, these are the things you can and can't do. And that ties the hands of the TEA, which ties the hands of the school districts independently. Now, some districts, fortunately, are stronger than others because of their bond rating, because of their, you know, the property taxes that they bring in, and because of the financing that they already have. But the school districts that have to rely on that money are really suffering right now. And you mentioned Edgewood earlier. Edgewood's one of them. At Harlandale, I want to say most of them were in the red in the past year because of this. I mean, we can't increase property taxes anymore. And funny side note, I don't know if people know this, but the Bexar County Appraisal District has a board of directors. On the board are some of the school districts as well. So when people say, well, school districts don't affect me, well, it does, because you pay property taxes. Or you have to pay rent, and rent is impacted by property taxes. So just side note, when people say, well, why get involved? Well, that's why, because you should know who's controlling your revenue pretty much.
Yeah. And we need to see more civic engagement. And I think that's one thing that we talked about in our pre-call, was something that you're looking to see as an improvement here in San Antonio. Why is that? Why do we need to see more dialogue between the parents, the students, the city government?
So the board of the independent school districts affect you even closer than council members, state reps, congressmen, for two reasons. They're affecting your children and they're affecting your taxes. And I've had people tell me, well, I haven't had kids in the school district over 40 years. Right, but you're paying taxes, or you also contribute to economic development. And the school districts are pushing out the next generation's workforce. And I always say that education is the basis of everything. If you don't have a good education system, you don't have a good economic system, you don't have a good structural system, safety, infrastructure, everything ties back to education. The reason people should be more involved is because, as we've been seeing, there has been more and more things done. And I'm not going to say behind the scenes, because all this is available to people. People can watch the board meetings. People can watch the state ledge. It's available. There's, you know, public notices saying when all these meetings happen, but it's going to affect your children directly, and it's going to impact them long term. And if you want the success of your children, please get involved. If you want the success of your community, get involved. Another side note, this was my husband's second time ever voting in an election. He's 50 years old, and we've been married for 13 years. And I always asked him every year, are you going to vote? No, of course not, because my vote doesn't count, or it's not going to affect me.
And we hear that a lot.
Yeah, you do hear that a lot. It's very discouraging. You know, when I was block walking, I would meet with parents of kids saying, yeah, but yeah, I don't really care because it's not impacting me. I'm looking at your child right now. It's impacting you. Do you not want a better future for your child? Do you not want better job opportunities for your child? Do you not want a better standard of living for your child? Not being engaged in your community results in people controlling your own standard of living, your own education, your own livelihood. And right. Going back to, you know, I love this country. And, you know, that's the whole reason this country started, is for our own independence and for our own, you know, chance to speak up for ourselves. So why aren't we taking advantage of that right that we have?
Well, and I also think that a lot of people tend to focus on like the general election and bigger elections rather than maybe state, city, municipal, board elections, you know, right. Things of that sort that affect us usually more directly. Obviously, things up to the state and federal level affect us as well, very much so, especially right now in education. But right. But even more so, to your point, you know, just engaging with your council member, with board members, going attending PTA meetings, right? I mean, just being more involved, it can go a long way, especially when it comes to the education of your child. I don't have children, but I feel that way. I mean, I know just from growing up and just seeing other families and seeing, you know, when bonds get passed. And anyways, all those things. I mean, it takes engagement. How do you think we can get better at that?
A lot of times people say, I don't have the time for it. I'm busy. And I understand, you know, our generation, you know, is balancing work. It's balancing life. We're balancing a lot of things. And I understand that. And I think you and I have experienced the past year, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel even more exhausted from last year than I ever have, even though I've, you know, been doing the same routine day after day after day. But there's no excuse to, I don't have time or I don't have the knowledge. You know, even if it's 15 minutes to read the paper, if it's, you know, an hour out of the month to go to an HOA meeting, just to know what's going on. It doesn't take you that long to be informed. Number one, you have to be informed. That is the most important thing to be in if you're going to be engaged. And I say, honestly, that every adult should be informed of what's going on in your surroundings. And it's not that hard. Like I was saying, this is all public information. You can log on to the state's website and see when public meetings are happening. You can look at all the bills. I'm going to be honest with you. Sometimes those bills are a little, you know, confusing. They use a lot of legal jargon. But you can also Google, hey, what is this? And you'll find an entire article by the Texas Tribune or the New York Post explaining exactly what the jargon is. And there's even professionals that break it down for you. There's even nonprofits. The three nonprofits I'm always, or the four nonprofits I'm always promoting are, there's a group called Raise Your Hand Texas. It's a newer nonprofit, and they're advocating for the quality of education here in the state. But they break it down for you to the basics. Another one is Mind Shift, which is awesome. And I'll get back to that one later on how to even be more involved. But they give parents and adults the tools to be more involved in the schools. So number one, be informed. Number two, there's no such thing as being too busy. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but, you know, I have two kids right now in the other room doing, you know, summer school right now, also a full-time job in another city. So that means, you know, 2 hours out of the day commuting. I also don't say no to every time I get asked to be on a board or service, you know. And yeah, it does get exhausting sometimes. But the thing is that if I don't participate, I can't complain later when things don't go the right way for my children. So 15 minutes a day, you can participate in your child's school. You can participate in your HOA. I'm going to tell you guys, if you don't have kids, your local PTA doesn't care. They want volunteers and they want people being active. And PTAs are actually pretty awesome. People think that it's like a bunch of middle-aged soccer meetings. Moms. Yeah. No, they're a great group of people. I'm actually, you know, vice president of programs for the PTA, and we do everything from, you know, tacos with non-traditional guardians all the way to mental health socials. We're also the ones raising money for field trips and supplies for the teachers, because I don't have to tell people, but, you know, teachers pull money out of their own pockets for school supplies. And those field trips are not paid for by the schools. They're actually paid for by all those fundraisers. So every time the kid brings chocolate or gift wrap, it's paying for a trip to the zoo or a trip to the missions or, you know, pretty much any field trip. So number two, don't say that there's no time. And number three is just look around. San Antonio is one of the cities with the most nonprofits in their metropolitan area. So there's always a need for volunteers. You know, it can be 15 minutes a day just making calls for this nonprofit. Even the schools, you can pick up, you know, supplies from one of the teachers at the school and help them, you know, fold hamburger or hot dog style, these little booklets for them. There's no such thing as, you know, you can't volunteer. I don't have time. I don't have the capacity. There's any level of skill. So those are the main things. Be informed. There's no such thing as no time, and go out there and volunteer, because there are so many organizations out there that do require some extra hands.
Now, do you think some of it, though, is on us? And when I say us, I mean more organizations and schools, teachers, whoever it may be, officials. Do you think some of it is on us, though, to meet them in the middle or meet them in their home and come to their, you know, table to talk to them about these matters and how important it is to be engaged? Because the reason I bring that up is that a couple of weeks ago, I had an interview with DeMonte Alexander, and he was telling me that same thing, that sometimes these families, especially if they live in a low-income community, they don't have a computer. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about the digital divide. Yeah. They don't have a computer. Maybe they do, but they don't have an internet connection. Or maybe they do, but they have 10 family members or 7 or 5, and they can't share, you know, one computer, two computers among all those people. They don't have that prior knowledge of how to do a simple Google search or how to do the proper research. So I think some of it's on us, right? To go out and meet them in the middle and show them, not just expect them to do it, but us do it too. Show them why it's important.
Right. And that's why groups like the Montes Group and MindShift, that's why I'm always advocating for them. Because if we leave it to the schools or we leave it to some of these nonprofits, they don't have the manpower or the strength to do it. You know, teachers are already balancing as much as they can, you know, teaching your children, getting the supplies ready, getting the curriculum ready. But I'm going to go back to MindShift Ed, which is a group here in San Antonio. So they go into the community to teach low-income families how to be more active, how to speak, how to be engaged. And they do it sometimes in person, sometimes over the phone, sometimes virtually. But they have different methods and resources to meet people throughout different capacities. They have a graduating class every year, and it's mostly parents from, if I believe, Edgewood, Harlandale, and San Antonio ISD, even though it's open to all independent school districts. You know, just a few weeks ago, all these parents went to the ISD school board meeting, which is great. You have a full house of parents. You don't see that at board meetings. I feel that, yes, we do need to meet them in the middle, but we also have to think about, we don't have the resources available. If we had more manpower, if we had more funding, I wouldn't find an excuse, but we need to be strategic and use partnerships with the nonprofits that are already doing this work and already trying to reach out into the community, because we can't do everything by ourselves.
I mentioned, I kind of alluded to the digital divide, which is a huge challenge that we faced during the pandemic, and the pandemic is still going on. We don't know what's going to happen with this Delta variant at the time of this recording. But, you know, what people, I think, need to realize, and hopefully they've been listening to episodes and they've heard some of the other guests I brought on that talked about the digital divide. I had a great speaker, Olga Mukulis from Edgewood, that came on and spoke on here about it. You know, something that she mentioned is that digital divide has been there. It's been there. It just got exacerbated by the pandemic. It just got exposed, I guess you could say, by the pandemic.
Yes.
But it's been there, and it really affected the education of our children. I think, you know, when we look back 5, 10, 15 years from now, when some of these kids that are in elementary school are venturing off into their career, going to college or graduating college, hopefully, you know, I just hope that we don't view it, or I hope that it's not a lost year. You know, just because there were so many, I think there was an article I was reading from CBS. I don't know when the article came out, but it said something around the figure of 3 million students didn't go to class during the pandemic, you know, across the country. And like, that was a huge issue. And some of it was for a number of reasons, right? But a lot of it was just not having access. If you can't go to school, then your choice is to do virtual learning. But then hopefully you need to have a computer. And even if you're given a computer, I kind of alluded to this earlier, you may not have Wi-Fi, or you may not be able to share that computer among the 4 kids that you have in your household. Like, what are some of the challenges we face with this digital divide? And maybe what are some of your ideas that we can fight back against it?
Yeah. Definitely. So attendance is something that we do need to address after this, because that was another big issue. But, you know, people have to realize that internet is not a luxury. It's not, you know, cable. It's not having the fanciest iPhone. it's a necessity. And, you know, the internet was created as a way to connect knowledge across the world. And unfortunately, we don't have it now. A few years ago, I was in Germany as it was one of our sister cities, and we were there as a delegation. And of course, my cell phone's not working because I don't have a German cell line. But what I did find is that there was citywide Wi-Fi. So got onto, you know, the Wi-Fi, and I was able to at least message my family, let them know I had arrived. And that's how I communicated with people. You know, we do need to do our due diligence as a government to ensure that our children and our families have the basic resources. And like it or not, that is internet, just like utilities, just like water, just like shelter and infrastructure. Now it's going to be internet as well. I know the city has been doing some work with several agencies as well as the school districts to have more connectivity, but we need to be a little bit faster, because if we do wait on this, kids are going to get further and further and further out. You know, I even had an issue. You know, I'm talking to you from my house. I have fiber optic, and there was one day in the middle of the school year that our internet went out. You know, my daughters and I loaded up into the car, and we were in the parking lot of a school library, or not just a regular library, not a school library, sorry, just a regular library, you know, for the rest of the school day. And that was not comfortable to be, you know, one child, you know, in the back seat, one child in the front seat. And I'm like sitting outside the hood of my car trying to get some work done. And fortunately for me, that was one day, but I have seen many families doing that. And I've heard from several families. Thankfully, the Girl Scouts had a Wi-Fi spot, and several girls in my troop were doing that on a daily basis. Now, one of the things that really irked me during the year was that the school district said, well, we gave out Chromebooks and we gave out hotspots. Well, thank you. But if you don't know how to use it, you know, that child isn't going to be able to log on. And if a family member doesn't know how to help you log on, then you just have a pretty fancy paperweight on your desk. So earlier, remember, I was talking about nonprofits. One of the nonprofits that has really stepped up was a group called Senior Planet. Okay, so Senior Planet started even before the pandemic, teaching basic internet skills to senior citizens. So everything from Excel to Word to Zoom. But then during the pandemic, they really stepped up, because a lot of families in San Antonio are non-traditional families, which means that the grandparents or senior family members are taking care of the children. It can either be a full-time guardianship, or it can be, you know, in the case of my parents, they would take care of the kids while I was at work. So Senior Planet actually stepped up to teach and provide some tech support to those grandparents and non-traditional seniors that had kids that, you know, couldn't even figure out how to handle a Chromebook. And honestly, my kid got a Chromebook lent out to them, and it took me like 2 weeks just to figure out how to use it. So the two things that we need to do is A, as a government, again, provide the internet, and B, as either a district or as an agency, don't just check boxes and say, okay, I gave you the tools, here you go, you're all set. Because it's not going to help if you don't have the basic knowledge of these tools. You also have to be able to check in on these children. A lot of these children were home virtually, but without supervision. Now, some kids are a little bit more mature and responsible than others, but some kids, if you don't have the parent there pushing them, saying, hey, keep the camera on, hey, what's going on? Those kids are not going to log in. Or if they're logged in, they're probably going to be on YouTube or watching TV or zoning out. So another thing is to be checking up on the children and providing more social services. Of course, that alludes back to the budget, because staff personnel actually do more for the schools and for assistance, and they're constantly overlooked during budget season. So one of the resources would be have more staff support on site for those children, to be checking up on them as social services, not so much as the counselors, because counselors are already doing so much, but having some sort of staff support that's not just a teacher checking in to make sure, why are these kids not logging in? Is it because they don't know how to, they don't have the family support to do it? Or is it because they've mentally zoned out? And what's the reasoning for that? Is it because, you know, there's no supervision? Is it because there's some other outlying factors in their situation that's not letting them concentrate? You know, that would be a huge resource. And unfortunately, that's a bigger picture than us as individuals can do.
Yeah. And well, hopefully, you know, hopefully this Delta variant doesn't lead to school closures like COVID-19 originally did.
Right.
And hopefully we don't see, I mean, that's not even talking about future pandemics that we could see that we don't even know about. But,
right.
You know, hopefully we don't see that again. One organization that I spoke to was the Boys and Girls Club here in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. I spoke to Clara Guerrero there. You know, she took me on a tour of one of the clubhouses. What was really cool was they set up pods there at their clubhouses for kids to come and not just use the internet, but do their schoolwork and be in a setting where you can get your schoolwork done. You know, there's no distractions that you may have at home there. But of course, there's not a Boys and Girls Club in every single neighborhood.
Right.
And so, you know, I think something else that can be done, and I don't know if this is the city, maybe it's another nonprofit. I don't know what it may be. That's not my expertise, unfortunately. But seeing more of these community centers pop up in neighborhoods or just a neighborhood center where they can set up these pods and have internet and, you know, create an environment, a learning environment for these children where they can just walk down the street to, you know, if they need to, not have to drive 15 minutes, 20 minutes to get there. So hopefully that is something that we could see pop up throughout the neighborhoods here in San Antonio.
And, you know, they weren't the only nonprofit that was doing it. The Y was doing it. The Girl Scouts of Southwest Texas were doing it as well. One thing that I've seen with nonprofits, as well as I've seen with the schools, is that everyone tends to work in a silo and everyone's doing the same thing and not communicating with each other. You know, going back to lack of resources and lack of staff to be able to say, you know, hey, what are you doing? You know, it would be wonderful if there was one agency where everyone can communicate and coordinate. You know, for example, having some sort of community page for nonprofits and say, hey, this is what we're doing. Anyone else doing this? Maybe we can tag team off of each other. Because you're right, Boys and Girls Club isn't in every neighborhood. And, you know, Girl Scouts only has two spots here in town. I want to say Girls Inc. did something similar. But if everyone coordinated together and everyone communicated with each other, it would make things a lot easier and be able to spread those resources out even more. But again, it's going back to the lack of resources. Now, if anyone is out there listening and they want to create an app or some sort of page, community page where nonprofits can talk to each other, that would be awesome. Or, you know, I've also pitched for years with Northside ISD, creating some sort of like focus group or network of the different schools to do the best practices in communication. Like, hey, how does this middle school do so well with this kind of communication? And maybe we should have a focus group to pick ideas off of each other. So that was my Northside pitch for years. I'm still pitching it to them. But if anyone's listening and wants to do some sort of like community page, maybe San Antonio Area Foundation. I know you guys are huge on helping a nonprofit. Same thing, United Way.
What I have found, you know, interviewing a lot of nonprofits here in San Antonio, I haven't interviewed every single nonprofit here in San Antonio, but I've interviewed quite a few up to this point. What I have noticed, I will say, to give them some credit, is that they do a pretty good job of working together. And I think in general, San Antonio is pretty good at working together as a community. But you're right. I mean, I think no matter what, we can still improve that connectivity among nonprofits and community groups. And I think that will, in the end, benefit the children and some of these challenges that we face. Now, earlier I mentioned attendance, and I mentioned that there was a couple of factors that went into the lack of attendance during the pandemic and when we were doing a lot of virtual learning. Some of that was because teams were working, and it wasn't just working, you know, like a summer job that they might get at the swimming pool. It was working because some of their family members were not working because they were fired and they lost their job and they were trying to find a job, but they couldn't.
Right.
And so some of these teens were out there working, and that led to that decrease in attendance as well. You know, they had to, and I just can't imagine this. It's so unfortunate. I mean, I'm thinking of someone who's 16, 17, 18. They're in high school, but they're almost forced because they need to provide for their family, or they're being asked to, but they're missing out on that education, right? They're missing out on a year of education, important education. Did you see that in Northside as well?
I did. It was predominantly in the Holmes and Jay high schools. On average, disappeared, quote unquote, students was about 3% across the board. And those were some, I don't know, I don't have the top numbers, top percentages in Holmes and Jay, but it was more than double than 3% of missing students. And they were as young as 15. Now, one thing to note is that the dropout age where you can legally drop out of a school is eighth grade. And some kids were just deciding not to come back. Not as early as eighth grade. We're talking about teen students as young as 15 trying to get a job. And it's not just getting a job. There were some kids that had to take care of their siblings because they were the oldest ones. So, hey, here I am making sure my brother and sister are getting onto their Zoom classrooms and making sure that they're being taken care of and babysat and fed. I don't have time for me. I don't have time for my classes. So, you know, you had the ones that had to drop out completely and you totally missed them. They were not coming into class at all because they had a job. But you had the other student that was, you know, turning onto Zoom, you know, getting the attendance checked off, and then they had to turn it off because they had to go take care of family. And, you know, those aren't counted in the numbers. And those also got it even worse because they're not being checked on. You know, the school district was doing a good job on going and knocking on doors of those children that weren't coming into class and weren't checking in. But if you have a child that says, okay, I'm here at Zoom, I'm checked in, and they're turning in the assignments, but dismally because they're not really even focusing on the assignment, who checks up on them? Well, no, we, again, checking the box, they checked in, they got attendance, they turned in their assignment. You know, you have to see both ends of that spectrum, the kids that completely dropped out and also the kids that, you know, were online, but they were focusing on other things. I did hear a story of one girl who would check into every class from her job. So she's waiting.
I did see that story.
Yeah. So, and that was not, a rarity. I've heard from several children that were doing that. And I even heard from some high school kids that were saying, you know, I check into my first four classes and then after lunch, I go to work. So they were doing okay in the morning, but after, you know, they were failing the afternoon classes because, hey, I'm at work right there.
Well, you know, and that leads me to think about something. And I know we kind of talked about this a little bit in our pre-call. We kind of see this cycle amongst some families that, you know, when you grow up, I mean, sure, of course, they make you go to school because you have to go to school legally.
Yeah. Or you get arrested.
Right. You know, there's the expectation that family comes first, which is, it should be. Family does, you know, does come first, but it's almost to the point where, you know, you're going to give up that education and a possible career and a possible change in trying to end that generational poverty almost. Mm-hmm. You know, you're giving that up because you're putting the family first and you're going out and getting a job.
Right.
And it's almost like a mindset that's been taught that no matter what, okay, put aside your learning, your homework doesn't matter, your learning doesn't matter, school doesn't matter. You need to be here with your family. It's a touchy subject.
Right. And we do see that a lot. And with the pandemic, it suffered even more because you're pushing kids further and further down. They already had a digital gap to begin with, and now they have to get jobs. And you don't see that with the affluent neighborhoods because, you know, more job stability, they have the resources available. And unfortunately, San Antonio has always been, and the state of Texas too. I mean, the state of Texas is number 39 in education overall out of 50. And San Antonio's average education age is eighth grade. We also have one of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the country as well, and some of the highest dropout rates as well. Thankfully, we're doing a much better job on graduating kids, but we're not graduating them with the resources and the education that they need. Some kids are graduating with a fourth grade reading level. Now, going back to the cycle, it's not that parents are doing it out of malice. It's more of a, this is what I've always seen. This is how I grew up. And family comes first. And, you know, talk about Hispanic families. I'm a Hispanic woman. It's a lot harder for us because family does come first. And not only your immediate family relies on us, but our extended family. You know, the entire family expects you to drop everything and provide for the family. And right. I don't mean by monetary, like, you know, the men do. The men bring the money home. It's, hey, you know, so-and-so's sick. So-and-so needs help. You know, so-and-so needs to be babysat. So-and-so needs a ride. Who's going to do it? The daughter is, or the nieces or the granddaughter is. So you even have that extra cultural pressure on Hispanic women who are already doing very badly in education as it is, especially in STEM. And that's really sad for me to say because I am huge on STEM. I mean, that's what my kids are doing back in the back room. They're doing engineering classes. But we already have a huge gap for Hispanic women in regards to education. it's really hard to break a cycle when you don't even know you're in one. And that's one of the things I've seen and done as much as I can too. I mean, thankfully I came from a family that always pushed for education, but they also pushed the, you know, sometimes they would do it unwillingly or unknowingly saying, well, I mean, if you go to college, it should be a backup in case your husband can't provide for you. No, I want to go to college to provide for myself. Or, you know, family back home in Mexico goes like, well, why do you still have a job? Like, is your husband doing okay? Is he not financially stable? It's like, no.
That's exactly what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And, it, you know, you kind of put that stigma and that kind of embarrassment, like, oh, you know, what are they going to say? And, you know, young ladies as it is already have a very sensitive, you know, mentality because we're already going through a lot of stuff. And then adding that stuff from the rest of the family just makes things a lot more complicated. So when you don't even know you're in that cycle, it makes things a lot harder. Now, my children go to a tier one school. Are you familiar with what that is?
No, I think you should explain that.
Yeah. So there are different tiers in education. And tier one means that there is a large influx of low income students, Section 8 housing, and students receiving government assistance. So instead of saying, okay, you know, Johnny so-and-so and Sammy, we're going to give you free meals because, you know, you're coming from low income, or, hey, Susie, you're going to need to go get specialized training because of this. They give it to the entire school, regardless of income. It makes things a lot easier in the paperwork, but also reduces, you know, having to point children out and say, hey, you know, this kid's in the foster system, this kid's in Section 8 housing. Why is so-and-so getting free meals? And, you know, makes things a little bit more awkward with your classmates. So the entire school gets it. So my daughters are in a tier one school and, you know, they're, you know, attending classes with children that have come from those cycles, the cycles of domestic violence, the cycles of teenage pregnancy, the cycles of, hey, well, my mom didn't go past high school, then why should I? And when you're talking to the parents, a lot of it is that they didn't even realize that there was more available to them. So when you start talking to them and say, hey, you know, there's all these services, there's free sessions that I'm going to attend next week on how to find scholarships for my kids. And, you know, I had just last week, I was talking to one mom and she said, you know, I don't even know the first place to look for scholarships for my daughter, who's a senior in high school. I'm like, well, we got to get on it right now because she's about to start her senior year and those scholarships like boom, boom, boom. You need to have all that ready by the spring. She didn't even know that she should have been looking about 2 years ago. She didn't know where to look. She didn't know that there were free resources out there. And honestly, she wasn't even thinking of college for her kid because she knew that she wasn't going to be able to afford it. So, you know, knowing that there's assistance available to them, and it goes back again to what we were talking earlier. If you don't have the internet at home or you don't even know how to go on Google and look this stuff up, how is it going to help? So that's why I'm always stepping up saying, hey, I'm willing to to do the research for you, or let's like look through this paperwork. Another thing I had realized, this was several years ago in our Girl Scout troop. A lot of their girls are from all West San Antonio. So, you know, everything from the medical center where I'm at all the way to Pinon Marbach is our troop. I remember this girl telling me, like, you know, Miss, why do you always dress the way you do? Well, I dress like this because this is, you know, how I go to work. And she's like, well, what do you do for work? And I explained to her, you know, I work in the government. These are some of the things I do. And she says, you know, I have never seen anyone look like you, even though, you know, we're both Hispanic. I've never seen anyone look like you and dress like you because my mom works in cleaning. So, you know, she's always like in a t-shirt and sweats. The rest of the women in her family are, you know, working at home as mothers. So she didn't know that someone like her could dress the way I do and have another job besides what she's always seen, which is housekeeping. And I'm not going to say that that's not an honorable, you know, job, because it's a great job. I actually have aunts that are in it. But the fact that there's more opportunities out there than just what, hey, this is what my mom did, this is what my aunt did, and that's it. So I think it's up to us as people to, you know, be as helpful as we can in our society. And not just, you know, you were saying you don't have children, but that doesn't mean that you don't know children out there, right? And that you don't know parents out there that are starting out with children that might not even know, you know, all these nonprofits because you, you know, talk to them. You know, you might have heard of one nonprofit that might help out your neighbor, and you might not have even realized it without not talking to your neighbor. And we have to be more open about that, you know, more open about reaching out to our community and seeing, hey, are you okay? Are you doing? It's not something embarrassing. And, you know, going back to Hispanics, we don't ask for help and we don't like touching on touchy subjects like, hey, I don't want to talk about this. This is not our thing. We have to get outside of that and we have to talk to each other and we have to check up on each other. And we also have to know how to ask for help. It's not something embarrassing.
I think we are getting a little better just in general as a community about being more open. I think we've kind of normalized, you know, the improving our mental health and things of that sort, reaching out for help, asking for help, kind of explaining what we're maybe not good at and, and things of that sort. And I think if we continue to do that, I think we'll see improvement in those areas. I think, I think it's absolutely true that sometimes, not just Hispanics too, we kind of hold ourselves to this high standard and we're almost embarrassed to admit when we're doing something, when we don't know something or we're receiving some kind of help. We don't want to tell our neighbor. We don't want to tell our family or friends because we're embarrassed, you know, that we're going to be looked at under a different light. But I think if we are more open in having that dialogue and having those conversations, it may help as a community. Because let's just say, you know, I'm receiving some kind of assistance and I'm embarrassed to say it. And so because I'm embarrassed to say it and talk about it and open up to a friend, they may not know that that service is available and they may need that service.
Right.
But all because I'm embarrassed to talk about it, they may not ever find out that service is available to them or those resources are available. That's just an example of two people or two families. And there's millions of families in the country, you know, in San Antonio. So, I mean, you're exactly right. And I think that's the point that you're proving or trying to prove and explaining. And that's the point that I'm getting at, is that the more open we are about the resources that are available, whether or not we're receiving them or not, is only going to help the community surrounding us.
And why be embarrassed? If you feel embarrassed about it, someone else is going through the exact same thing, then why be embarrassed? You're not the only person on the planet that you're, you know, going through the same thing. So we have to, you know, curb that. We also have to curb what we call imposter syndrome too. A lot of times people are not getting out of their comfort zones because they feel that they're not going to be good enough. You'd be surprised the people that go through that insecurity that you think are doing wonderfully and are so cocky and confident and doing, you know, have a perfect life. That's not true. No one has a perfect life. No one's no one's overly confident unless you're a complete narcissist. but I haven't met a person in San Antonio that's like that yet, because we're, you know, a great city full of helpful people. So, you know, we as a people have to get past that imposter syndrome, because we're never going to get anywhere, whether it's in our personal lives or professional lives, in our volunteer lives. And that's going to affect our community in the long run, because if we're not getting out there and going outside our comfort zone, then we're staying in our little silos, which I mentioned that schools do and nonprofits do. We do it as people too. And that's not going to help our community. We need to be more open with each other and we need to create a larger net.
Well, I like to end the interview on a lighthearted note. I typically ask the guest, because of course they all live in San Antonio and you live in San Antonio. What are some places around San Antonio that you frequent that you enjoy? Whether it be a restaurant, could be a park, could be a bar, it could be anywhere. You know, it's just places that you love and you enjoy here in San Antonio.
Okay, that's hard because I love to eat.
So, I think we all do here.
I'm also a huge nerd. So I'm going to give a shout out to the San Antonio Public Libraries. I'm also excited that there's new Schaefer Trails Library on the southeast side of town, which is off of all the way off of 87. So yes, we got another library on the south and east side of town. We need more SAPL. We need more down there. So libraries are one of my favorite hangout spots. I'm also on the executive committee for the Fiesta Commission. So that helped me meet a lot of nonprofits. And one of it is the Beethoven Manor Corps down off of Alamo and Breda. So if you like Wiener Schnitzel, if you like polka, and you like good Riesling, they're open not just during Fiesta. They're open pretty much every evening for some, you know, good home cooking German food. I forget what today's special is, but on Fridays it's fish and chips. So they they switch it up on Fridays. So that's another place. And I'm honestly deep down a country girl. So I like just driving out into little towns in the hill country.
In the hill country, yeah.
Yeah, so
the hill country is very much part of San Antonio.
It is. I love it. You know, just taking Blanco and keeping on going, taking Babcock and just going till it stops. You'll be amazed what kind of cool little nooks and spots you'll find just driving around. And that's actually how I learned to drive here in San Antonio. I just get on the loop and just be like, oh, I wonder what this exit is. Now, closer to downtown, I do like the neighborhoods around there. So I do love driving through the Jefferson High School area.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, I love those neighborhoods. Jefferson was actually named the most beautiful high school in 1933 in the U.S.
It's so cool driving by it and just seeing, because it just looks like it's out of place in a sense.
Exactly.
But in a good way.
Yeah. Right? And sorry, Northside, that was a San Antonio ISD school, but I had them like, that is a beautiful school. And then finally, you know, in my part of town where I live, we have a huge influx of Asian and African communities. So that's why I love my neighborhood, because we have Kenyan, Ethiopian, Ghanaian communities here in the area. So on Babcock and Callahan, okay. Ethiopian, all you can eat. And then there's another one called Rices right there off of Eckerd and Bandera, and it's Kenyan food. So if you want something healthy yet meaty, definitely go for African food, because that stuff is so good. It's really good, and it's actually a lot healthier than it looks.
Well, not to take away from their shine, but you said Eckerd and Bandera, and I have to think of, there used to be an Italian restaurant there. I don't know how familiar you are.
What, was it Milano's?
Yes, and that was my favorite Italian restaurant.
And they closed it down.
I think it's been closed for about 3 years or now, or so now. But I went there as a kid. My parents would always take me there. And that was just one of my favorite Italian restaurants. And it closed. And it made me so sad.
So I actually have a weird memory about that. I don't know how old I was. But so you had Milano, and then you had a vacant unit next to it.
Next to it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was the owners or the manager, but their son would hang out there on the weekends, and we were the same age. And he had like a Power Wheels, like convertible. And he'd go play in that vacant unit. And while my parents were having dinner and talking to, you know, to the manager, we go and like do donuts. I must have been like 5 or 6 years old, maybe 7. So every time I drive by there, I'm like, man, I wonder what happened to that kid and his Power Wheels.
Yeah. Well, I hope that family is doing okay. I mean, that was, it was an enjoyable Italian experience inside there. You know, it wasn't, I mean, don't get me wrong, I eat at Olive Garden, but you know, it felt a little more Italian.
No. Okay. If you want Italian, besides Caporelli's is good. But you have Sorrentino's right by St. Mary's University. Have you tried it?
I haven't. I've heard about it.
Oh, it's real good. Like, the owner's from, I want to say either New York or New Jersey.
Okay.
It's good. You're going to like it. Yeah.
There's another apparently good Italian restaurant that I've been meaning to try too off Culebra called Umberto's. It's in a little shopping center as well.
Yes.
By Petrenko and Culebra.
Yes, I heard it's really good. Yeah. I haven't tried it yet. Oh, okay. And if we're talking about like places down there, okay. I've been eating here since 1988, but you have to go to the original one. Don't do any of the branches. Walk-in on Grissom.
A walk-in. Okay.
Yeah, and they have a soup buffet. I think I'm the reason that they only limit you to like one cup of soup now, because I would do like 9 or 10 visits to to the soup station.
So that's the original one then?
The original one. And I have really fond memories of that. When we moved to town, we were living at the Warren Inn, which I don't know if you're very familiar with that place off of Fredericksburg and 410. It's not the nicest place. It was a very shady spot.
And, outside of 410 or inside of 410?
Inside of 410. Okay. Inside of 410. I think they call it like the Villa Suites or something else. So it was a very shady spot. That's when my parents decided to drive around to look for, hey, you know, where's Northside? What are the schools? And that's how we ended up, you know, in the neighborhood that we eventually moved in. And it's nighttime, you know, I've You know, coming from the valley, I don't know Asian food at all. I know Mexican food and I know Tex-Mex food and I know more Mexican food. So I remember that my dad sees this place and he's like, hey, you know, we're going to stop here, and tells, you know, my mom, like, hey, you know, can you just order something? I'll wait in the car with the baby, which was my brother at the time. So I get down with her and, you know, everyone's so welcoming, like, oh, this is awesome. I've never been to an Asian restaurant. And the lady was so helpful, explained to my mom, like, what all the food was, because my mom hadn't seen really Asian food either. And she was like, you know, your dad didn't even tell me what to order. Like, he just said something with beef. So I remember that was like a very fond memory that was like, okay, this is the neighborhood that we're moving to. Like, and this is the place. And we would go every Sunday. So that contributed to my childhood obesity, honestly, but really good food and still really good food. And then the lady that used to be at the counter is left it to her kids and grandkids. But she still goes around and like picks up the dishes, and you'll still see her there too. So if you want like a community place, really good food, definitely walk in on Grissom.
I'm going to have to try that. I've been to the other walk-ins, but not the original. So I'm going to have to try that one out.
Yeah. Try the original one. It's the best.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast and speaking to me. I know we had a great conversation about just education and a lot of the challenges that San Antonio and people in the community face when it comes to education, and how we need to see more engagement between parents, students, teachers, the government, local governments,
right,
nonprofit organizations. And I think that was really important. It's a great conversation for people to listen to.
Right.
And I just appreciate your time. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. I just want to tell people, you know, don't forget to speak up, you know, speak up. A simple email, a simple phone call, board members, you know, local officials, they expect that from us. And, you know, they're there because we voted them there, or we didn't vote for them there because you guys didn't go vote. But, you know, don't be afraid to speak up. Nothing's going to happen with a simple phone call, a simple email. People need to hear from us, and our government needs to hear from us. So be active. Again, stay engaged. There's no such thing as I am too busy to be informed or to help. Takes you 5 minutes out of the day just to glance through what's going on with your local politics. Also, Zachary, do you mind if I share some of the nonprofit websites with you, like my top four?
Of course. Of course. And then after that, go ahead and plug in wherever you want the listeners to find you, anything that you're doing, any events, anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. I'll definitely, I still don't have my City of San Marcos email set up yet. but you can always find me on Twitter and Facebook, which is Vote Irma, which is, you know, super easy to remember. And you know, I'm always the kind of person that says, I don't have all the knowledge, but I know someone that probably does. So, you know, if y'all have a question about anything, either a nonprofit or resource, believe me, I'll make sure I find it for you guys. I mean, being part of, again, the Fiesta Commission, that's 100 nonprofits at our fingertips. Being part of the city, we do have connections with 30 departments and 11 elected officials, if you count the mayor. And I still have those connections, even if I did go to the city of San Marcos. So, you know, I'm always open to helping someone out because I've been helped my whole life and I have to give that back. And that's something people need to remember, too. We don't get where we're at by ourselves. You know, keep that cycle going. So feel free to tweet or Facebook me. I'm on Facebook a lot, so I'll see your message. It was so great getting to meet you, Zachary.
Of course. Well, thank you again. And I appreciate you being on here. That's going to do it for my discussion with Irma Duran. I really hope you enjoyed it. We're going to take a quick ad break, and I'll be right back with our local recommendation and question of the week. Stay tuned. Hey guys, it's Zach. As some of you may know, I help people plan for retirement. And as your advisor, I can not only show you how money truly works, but put you in control of your money today and in retirement. If you're looking to schedule a financial review, please give me a call at 210-760-0409. Welcome back into SA Talk. Once again, I appreciate my guest, Irma Duran, for joining me on the podcast. It's always nice to come across a fellow professional who is doing what they can to get involved and be part of the change they want to see. My main takeaway was just that there's no excuse. You know, we should be involved in our community, whether it's joining the local PTA, volunteering at a local nonprofit, joining a mentoring program like Big Brothers Big Sisters, right? Shout out to them. Donate extra disposable income if you have it. Communicate with your neighbors. Make friends with them, right? Attend or listen to board meetings. Attend town halls if they have them. Vote in local elections. That's extremely important. I've said that multiple times. And those are just a few examples. I could go on and on and on, but the point is, just make it a priority to pay attention to what's going on in your community and try to participate. And before we get to this week's local recommendation, I just want to quickly remind listeners that you can follow the podcast on social media at SA Pod Network. That's at SA Pod Network. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So give us a follow. Give us a like. If you enjoyed the discussion, want to support the podcast, please click on the link in bio on any social media platform and click the support monthly button. You can set up monthly donations as little as 99 cents per month, up to $9.99 per month. And I'd really appreciate it if you did. Now back at it again, this week is another local recommendation from SA Lunchador, your favorite Instagram and TikTok foodie. So take it away.
Hey there, y'all. It's SA Lunchador again with the weekly recommendation for the SA Talk podcast. Today, I'm going to put you on to Al Carbón Pollos Asados. They've got two locations. Their original location is at 547 Culebra, and the second location is at 13835 Nacogdoches. Now, as their name implies in Spanish, they do primarily sell grilled chicken, but man, they do it better than most places here in San Antonio, in my opinion. You can get it done by quarters, half a chicken, or a whole chicken, or my personal recommendation would be their parrillada familiar. Now, I know because of COVID, prices do fluctuate a lot, but the last time I ate here, it was about $41.99, which with taxes about $46. And for that price, you're going to get a whole chicken, a pound of fajitas. You're also going to get two Mexican sausages packed with cheese and bacon. You're going to get a side of rice, sides of beans, guacamole, salsas, tortillas. It's just honestly the best deal that they have to offer, so I would highly recommend getting it if you're going to try it for the first time. Now, the reason I promote this place higher than, let's say, Pollos Norteños, which I know everyone in San Antonio puts in high regard, is because I've never had a bad experience there. The chicken is always juicy. I don't know, there's something about the flavor. Heck, even the sauce is better than at Norteños because it has a certain kick to it that you just won't find anywhere else. They do tend to get pretty busy every now and then, so I would say if you're in a rush, you can call ahead and they'll go ahead and get your order prepared ahead of time so that all you have to do is pay for it when you get there and you'll be on your way. Also, if you're flat out just not feeling chicken or let's say smoked meats, then they also offer hamburgers that are topped with that Mexican salchicha, cheese, bacon, the whole works. It's also worth trying if you're there. But anyways, that's pretty much it for this place. Again, menu's not too confusing, pretty straightforward. Just go try that chicken, you won't regret it. And that's going to do it for my weekly recommendation. Again, this has been SA Lunchador. Find me on TikTok or Instagram for more food recommendations. Back to you, Zach.
Thank you again, SA Lunchador, for providing this week's recommendation. Like he said, be sure to follow him at SA Lunchador. That's SA as in San Antonio, Lunchador on Instagram and TikTok. Do it now. Pause the podcast. Go follow him, TikTok and Instagram. Now, moving on to the question of the week, to go along with the discussion that Irma and I had on this episode, I want to know, how are you involved in the community? If you want to answer on Facebook or Instagram, find the new SA Talk episode post and comment below. If you want to answer on Twitter, you can do so by doing the same or just tweet with hashtag SA Talk Answers. Really interested to see the different ways that you guys, the listeners of this podcast, are participating in your local community. It's very important. I talk about it all the time. It's not just supporting local businesses, but it's also volunteering and giving your time, giving your money, giving your participation in helping this community thrive and improve in any way it can. With that said, that is going to wrap up this week's episode of SA Talk. I want to give a huge thank you to all the repeat listeners. It means a lot to me that you keep listening to the episodes and content that I keep putting out. I also want to thank any new listeners checking out the show for the very first time. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, I would encourage you to check out my other series on the network, Searching for San Antonio. And if you want to help the podcast out, please give a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Lastly, if you or any business owners you know are looking to advertise with the podcast, please reach out to me directly at Zachary at sapodnetwork.com. Thank you all again. Have a wonderful weekend. See you again next week, and viva San Antonio.